Listen to every episode of Stokely and Zach on demand at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business. So should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Can we be there?
On we are here. You don't have to think about it. It's right here. It's right now on a Bud Light Football Friday live from Blake Street Tavern.
Happy Friday, Brandon Stokely. Happy Friday, buddy.
Did you happen to watch that football game last night?
I did. I was a little bit surprised, I can't lie. A lot surprised.
What surprised you?
I didn't think Carolina would lose that football game. I thought that they'd play a lot better. I thought they were a better football team. Their defense is good, but their offense stinks.
Oh, my goodness.
Cam Newton's awful. He is flat out awful.
Stoker doesn't look like he can throw the football.
No. He is so inaccurate with the football. It is... I'm just amazed watching him throw the football, and every time he throws it now, I'm like, oh, that's going to be 8 yards out of bounds. That's going to be 5 yards. I mean, he's not even close to being an accurate passer anymore. I don't know what happened with that shoulder, but it must have been really bad.
And
he's never a shell of himself.
He was never great in terms of accuracy in the first place, but it's somehow gone from bad to worse.
Yep.
And you mentioned the shoulder. I mean, you're on it. I just don't know. Like, see, Cam... The thing that made Cam special wasn't because he was going to be a 66% completion rate guy, but he was such a physical specimen that it mitigated some of that lack of a consistent accuracy. But I'm seeing that fleeting as well. I saw him try to take off in an RPO, and it was like, I mean, he looked like my grandfather. I mean, he's lumbering. He doesn't look athletic. They didn't go to him on the goal line play, which used to been like standard operations for Carolina. And if you're one of these guys like Christian McCaffrey or Curtis Samuel or DJ Moore, and you're relied upon or your job needs a first step. You need the quarterback to give you the ball. They got to be ripping their hair out.
Yeah, it's I feel bad for Cam. He doesn't look like the same quarterback. Obviously, like you said, a big part of his game was being able to run the football, and they're not really doing that much anymore. So that takes away from the guys loading the box.
Yeah.
And now it's harder for him to throw the football, and you're not getting as good of matchups as you used to get on the outside. And I think Norv Turner did an awful job last night. And I was watching the game, and way too many times I saw Christian McCaffrey just, you know, going up in the line and blocking a blitzing linebacker. You have got to get him out in the routes. You've got to get him out in the passing game. And they didn't do that enough. They didn't give him the football enough. And you saw what happened. You saw what happened, and then you get down there, and you got a chance to take the lead and win the game, and you have a 4th-and-2. You're fortunate because Tampa Bay calls 2 timeouts in a row, so they get penalized. Now, all of a sudden, it's 4th-and-a-half a yard.
Right.
Because I tweeted in the moment at 4th-and-2, I said, the ball's got to go to Christian McCaffrey. And then, all of a sudden, it's 4th-and-a-half a yard. Well, that changes everything. You've taken the shotgun with Cam Newton, and it's like a wildcat, and you just bully everybody. Or you just go under center and just quarterback sneak it. They're not stopping him for a half a yard.
Right.
And you try some trick play. You try to get outside. I mean, that's bad offensive coordinating at its finest right there. That was an awful job by Norv Turner.
It came across for me as trying way too hard.
Right.
Trying to outthink, outsmart, and you end up outsmarting yourself.
And on 4th-and-2, if you wanted to run that, okay.
Fine.
But on 4th-and-a-half a yard, you have to be able to look at the situation and say, you know what, oh, this is a half a yard here. No, we're not going to run that play that we had dialed up. Cam, this is you. At the end of the football game, we're not taking any chances here. We're not trying to be too cute. We're just going straight up the middle. With our quarterback that's, I don't know, 6'5", 240, 250?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. Do you know how many times Cam Newton threw the football last night?
50-something.
51 times.
Yeah.
51 times. Didn't throw a touchdown. I mean, gosh, really hard to watch.
And it wasn't like he was dealing. That's the thing. He was very inaccurate. So
he was less than 50%. Completion rate. Less than 50.
Yeah.
He was 25 of 51.
I'm a Cam Newton fan. I like watching him play football, plays tough, but he's not the same. He hadn't been the same quarterback the last couple of years. I don't know if it's the hits, the pounding that he took early on, or what, but he's not the same quarterback. And obviously, he had the shoulder issue, but it's a shame, man. I feel bad for Christian.
2.3 yards per carry for Christian last night.
Teams are just loading the box, and they're just going to try to take him away and say, Cam Newton, beat us with your arm, because he can't do it anymore. You know, Greg Olsen's a decent tight end. He can't create the separation that he used to create. And the guys on the outside are pretty good. They had separation on a few plays, and Cam's just underthrowing them or overthrowing them. Had a chance for a big play with the little rub route when the Tampa Bay blew a coverage right over the middle, and it was going to be a first down. It might have been a touchdown, and he threw it behind the guy. The guy's got to catch it, though. So... That was tough to watch. And how about our former guy here?
You are... Well, can I just say one more thing about Cam Newton?
Yes.
Before we get to the Shaq Barrett conversation, because that was really the most fun watching that football game last night. But with Cam, like you, I have always been a fan of his talents. There's certain things I don't like about Cam Newton, but when I separate it and just put it on the football field, I've always been a huge fan. And I said to you a year ago, or maybe it was 2 years ago at this point, I thought Cam Newton was on a Hall of Fame track. The guy already has the NFL record for rushing touchdowns by a quarterback. He has been an MVP.
That's right.
He has played in a Super Bowl. He was building a Hall of Fame resume. And... The latest from what I'm seeing from Cam Newton, this is going to stunt his career unless they can figure something else out with him physically. I mean, there was rumors about, like, wasn't he supposed to be even potentially shut down for this whole season?
I didn't hear that. I didn't hear that. Could be. I just didn't hear it.
I remember that being a talking point at a certain juncture of time. But unless something changes, the Panthers were expected to be flirting with a playoff appearance. Their defense is terrific.
Yes.
They have a great tight end, maybe the best linebacker in football, maybe the best offensive weapon in all of football when you talk about Christian McCaffrey and how dynamic he is. And now you're looking at a Panthers team who has the Bucks come into Carolina
on a short week.
On a short week, where 90% of the time since the inception of Thursday Night Football, the home team wins. The Tampa Bay Bucks came into Carolina as a touchdown underdog, and really not only won, they controlled the football game from start to finish. I mean, if you're a Panthers fan or you're doing talk radio in Raleigh or Durham, they got to be in full blown panic mode.
Oh, it's this Ron Rivera. This will be his last year in Carolina. He's going to be gone. If not, he might be a mid season firing. But this will be his last year there. They just got a new owner a couple years ago.
That's right.
That thing's going to turn over. It just hasn't been good enough. And I don't know what you can do for Cam Newton. I just don't know what you can do. Because a big part of his game was his physical presence and being able to run the football. And that's been, that is no more. He doesn't have that type of presence. And on top of that, he's so inaccurate with the football. So, they're in trouble over there.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday live from Blake Street Tavern. Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Get down to Blake Street Tavern for the Broncos game this Sunday and register to win some incredible prizes courtesy of Bud Light. Blake Street Tavern, your pro and college football headquarters all season long. Blake Street Tavern is located at 2301 Blake Street in the heart of Lodo at Park and Blake. It's just right next to Coors Field. You guys know where it is. It's a big house on Blake. All right. Here's what we really wanted to get to from last night's game. One former Bronco flashed last night. You know exactly who it is. And I want to know if the Broncos should be regretting letting Shaq Barrett walk out that door. We'll take a dive into that conversation next.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank. Banking for good.
Stoke, a former Bronco, flashed last night. Shaq Barrett was everywhere. Could the Broncos be regretting letting him walk out the door? Three sack night. I mean, Shaq Barrett wrecked the football game. He wrecked the football game. I don't think the Tampa Bay Bucks beat the Panthers without Shaq Barrett last night. And by the way, he had a sack last week, too. So Shaq Barrett has four sacks on a one-year prove-it deal, betting on himself.
Get paid. Get paid, young fella.
Four sacks in the last two games. How about that?
And he's got a million-dollar sack incentive in his contract, and he's well on his way to getting that. I don't know how many it is, but you know, he just signed a one-year $4 million deal. That's what it looks like. $3 million guaranteed, and one-year $4 million deal. That's it for Shaq Barrett this year. He's got four sacks in two games, three last night. And it wasn't just a sack. He got a couple other hits and pressures on Cam Newton. One that really stood out to me was it was a fourth down. He got back there, made a nice move, got back there, put the pressure on Cam to make Cam throw it early, and he hit Cam right in the chest, and then he just laid off because Cam had thrown the football. And if he would have drove him into the ground, it would have been a penalty. So a smart play. A really, really smart play.
And I know we're all rooting for Shaq around here. Went to local school, right? He played for the Broncos for years. Shaq Barrett is a sack and a half away from tying his career high, and he's going into week three.
And he's getting a great opportunity there in Tampa, and he's taking advantage of it. You love to see it. A local kid went to CSU, right?
Yep, that's right.
Went to CSU, was great here, and now he's getting a real opportunity there, and he's playing awesome. Good for him. Good dude, too. Really good dude. I had a chance to meet him. He came out to the Down Syndrome event a couple years ago. Great dude. So pulling for him.
Easy to root for. Nikki Javala of The Athletic, presented by Ent Credit Union. Nikki, there was breaking Broncos news today, breaking ownership news. Can you catch us up for the most layman fan in the simplest terms? And I know that it's pretty convoluted and there's a lot here, but if you don't mind, try to explain what we need to know from this latest news that broke this morning.
Yeah, it is pretty complex, but basically what you need to know is Pat's two oldest daughters, Beth Bullen Wallace and Amy Clemmer, they filed a petition in Arapahoe County early this morning challenging the validity of the trust on the grounds they contend that Pat Bullen was not of sound mind because of Alzheimer's when he signed his 2009 estate documents with his trust. So they're challenging the validity of the trust, which, you know, could have some pretty significant implications for both sides. For Beth and Amy, they could be disinherited. There is a no contest clause in this trust, so they risk being disinherited by doing this. It could also have implications on the separate NFL arbitration that is going on with regards to the future ownership of the Broncos. So this was a pretty significant filing, and, you know, attorneys from both sides have released pretty strong statements saying they think their side will, based on the evidence that will come out in discovery in this process, they feel they will prevail. So
Nikki,
it's going to be a lengthy process.
Yeah, this feels like to me, and please, I guess I'm going to ask you to be a little bit subjective here, but this feels like maybe the biggest development within this back and forth, because it feels like this gets right to the heart of the issue. This is the true crux of the issue, that they believe, the Beth Bullen Wallace side, they believe that Pat Bullen was not of sound mind when they redid the trust, because they redid the trust about five times. They rewrote it, right? Starting in like 1998 and three or four more times leading up to 2009. But Pat Bullen was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2006, if I'm not mistaken. So they are getting right to the heart of the issue, saying that when this current trust rewrote this with Pat Bullen, he was not of sound mind. Do I have all that right?
Yeah, it does get to the heart of the issue. I mean, this is the most significant filing, and, you know, really the past year has kind of been building up to this. As far as the 2006 diagnosis, that's what Bill Bullen alleged in his lawsuit.
Okay.
That he was diagnosed in by doctors at the Mayo Clinic in Arizona around 2006. That has not been verified by trustees or anybody else up until this point. So that the date of when he was diagnosed is critical, but also the evidence that, you know, either side has to show about, you know, his state of mind at the time. You are right. The original trust was formed in 1998. It's been restated and amended many times since. And in 2009, it was restated by Richard Robinson, a state attorney who worked with Pat Bowlen, and he signed an affidavit stating that Pat Bowlen was of sound mind and he had a clear understanding of what he was doing, of how his assets were going to be handled. And Richard Robinson also drafted the power of attorney and Pat Bowlen's will that same year. So, long story short, this is a very significant filing. It does get to the heart of the issue. It does kind of feel like it's only just beginning, this dispute, though it feels like we've been at it for quite some time.
Right.
But there are high stakes for both sides on this one.
Stoke, any questions for Nikki?
Because the filing, the lawsuit that came, you know, last was his brother. And now it's his daughters. Is that correct? So, I mean, this is totally, totally different than the filing that just kind of got thrown out.
They're separate cases, yes. Bill Bowlen, he filed his lawsuit in October. It was dismissed in its entirety last month.
Right.
Beth and Amy first filed their petition in February. And this is kind of the latest filing related to that case. So they're separate cases, sort of related. I guess they're all kind of touching on similar topics.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. Here's the one thing I do know, and this is a large conversation that takes a lot of unpacking. I literally had to read your article twice on The Athletic because it's that thick, kind of like in the weeds with stuff. But here's what I do know for certain. That the thought that this thing was going away after Bill Bowlen's lawsuit was tossed out of court, that's not true.
This isn't going
anywhere, right?
Yeah. No. And even when that did happen, I mean, Amy and Beth's petition had already been filed, and arbitration is still on the table. That is scheduled for November. That didn't go away.
Okay.
Whatever happens in this case could impact that, you know, if the court finds that the trust is indeed invalid, arbitration becomes meaningless. But, you know, if they find the trust is legit and the trustees have been executing Pat's plan, then arbitration is warranted as of now. So there have been other things in the background. So Bill Bowlen's lawsuit, it was significant that it was tossed, but it never ended things by any means.
All right. Appreciate you coming on and kind of catching us up. Nikki Javala of The Athletic is presented by Ent Credit Union. Appreciate you, Nikki.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there she goes. This is another chapter, and it almost feels like a darn near new book almost. It's a whole new thing. And if Beth Bowlen Wallace and Amy Klemmer, there is a possibility that by them challenging this, they could lose their inheritance on this thing. So there's a potential. This isn't like some sort of money grab. Yeah. If this doesn't work out, they are out for challenging the trust.
So yeah. It's a big risk. So obviously it's a big deal because it's the Broncos, and you know it's kind of going down the same road that the brother went down, challenging was Pat healthy when he came up with the latest will, or did he have Alzheimer's at that point? So it's interesting. It's gonna probably take a while for it to unfold, and a lot of different layers here. Arbitration, like Nikki said, is still on the table, and she said that's in like November. So
yep, that's right.
Yeah, we'll see how it all unfolds.
Yep.
But it's probably going to be a while.
It's going to be a while. Hang tight. It's not going anywhere. All right, Stoke has been diving into the game tape of last week's Chicago Bears game against the Packers and has a few thoughts that he needs to pass along before game time. You'll hear that next. All right, Stoke, you've been watching the Chicago Bears film against the Green Bay Packers. I heard a Stink giving him some of his breakdown from his diagnosis of that game. I'm curious to hear what some of your thoughts are after really taking a deep dive into that thing.
couple concerning things. One that sticks out is Tariq Cohen. Obviously, we know he's a dynamic running back. Talked about him all week, right? He's really good in the passing game. He can be in the slot. He can be outside. He can be in the backfield. The guy can do it all. But also, you got to worry about him as a punt returner. Let's not forget about him as a punt returner. We know about our special teams. We lost arguably our best special teamer in Tim Patrick last week. So Wadman's got to do a great job of directional punting. Okay, and having some good hang time, because Tariq Cohen is one of those guys that can change a game in an instant, and he can do it as a punt returner also. So, you know, not just as a guy on the offensive side of the football, he can do it as a returner. So,
and we've seen how exactly that has hurt the Broncos in years past, and I know it wasn't the punting game. I don't think it was the kick return game this past week where the Raiders
right.
took it maybe, I don't know, 45 yards or so right to midfield.
That's right.
It's been an issue.
Yes, it has, and we've seen it this preseason. Hasn't been good enough all the way around the board. So you gotta do a good job of directional punting it and making sure you don't hit none of those low liners.
Right.
So Wadman needs to have a good game. The other thing that stood out is, you know, Trubisky can move. He's a decent athlete, and he's not afraid to tuck the ball and run with it. So on third down, you have to be aware of Mitch Trubisky running the football, because he is a threat to run it, and he's not scared to tuck it and run for a first down. So you got to count for him also, because those are the killers. Those are the killers. Well, you got everybody covered up, you get pressure on him, and then he steps up in the pocket, and he avoids a guy, and he gets 6 yards on third and five. So you got to count for Mitch Trubisky running the football. And they do the zone read stuff that we have mentioned earlier, and he will keep it on that. But on third down, those are the ones that really kill you, that you think you got everybody covered up. You get pressure, and then all of a sudden Vaughn and Chubb run around the outside, and the two big guys in the middle leave a little void there, and then he takes off for the first down.
Yeah, and you heard yesterday during the media availability with Ed Donatell and Vic Fangio, and actually Von Miller as well touched on it briefly, that Mitch Trubisky is a damn good athlete. I mean, he is a terrific athlete. We saw that since he was at the University of North Carolina, and has certainly bled into his professional career. He can really use his legs. So, that is something that I think the Broncos are on high alert about. Just judging off yesterday's press conferences, I think they are very hypersensitive to Trubisky's multi-dimensional threat.
I hope so. I do. The other thing that I noticed is the Bears' offensive line was a little out of whack. They were out of sync. And sometimes that happens in the first regular season game, especially when you haven't played a lot of preseason football, which they didn't play a lot of preseason football. The Packers did a good job. Did a good job of causing confusion with that Bears offensive line. Now the Bears have had, 10, 11 days to try to get everything fixed. I mean, they played a Thursday night game, the first game of the season. So I'm sure they've been working on those types of things. But they did a nice job of getting pressure and making it look like five or six were coming, but only three were blitzing and dropping out and confusing that Bears offensive line and getting pressure on Mitch Trubisky. And that's the key here. If you can put pressure on Mitch Trubisky, he'll just throw that ball anywhere. He's still a very young quarterback. He is in his third year, but he's a young quarterback that will make young quarterback mistakes. Get pressure on him, and he'll throw the ball up for grabs. Confuse that offensive line just like the Packers did. Packers did a good job.
You know, they really did. And I forget who said it after the game, and I heard Sandy quoting them. And maybe you'll remember the defender from the Packers who said, we want to make him play quarterback.
It was one of their defensive backs, I think.
Who was it, Steven? It was Tremont Williams.
Their cornerback.
You know, we want to make him play quarterback.
Yeah.
That is an incredible insult. I mean, there's probably not much more you can say that is more insulting than we want to make the quarterback play quarterback because we just don't believe him. He's not believable as a pocket passer. But I'll say this, man. I know that... I know that he is still very much a work in progress, but man, he had games. Sure, he had games, and I'm looking at last year. Sure, he had games of 110 yards, 135 yards, 171 yards. He also had games of 355 in a win, 333 against New England in a nail biter, 354 in a win. I mean, I'm saying this because I don't want the narrative about Trubisky to overgrow his actual struggles. Like, he's there for a reason. He's not a polished product.
Right.
But I don't want to make him. I don't want to make him sound inept either.
No, he's not. He had a good year last year, but he's still a young quarterback. I mean, you look at some of those numbers that you were saying in the, 110, 163, 165, 135. Look, he will struggle.
Sure.
He can struggle.
Sure.
And like you said, he's not a finished product at all, but he's still capable of going out there and beating you. But if you put pressure on him, he'll revert to some of those bad habits, and he'll throw you the football. So confuse that offensive line. Get after him. Give him different looks. And, you'll be able to get some turnovers there from Mitch. The other thing that kind of stuck out when looking at the Bears' defense, and I watched, I was like, oh, that's interesting. It was a third down and 10 play. They had Leonard Floyd, their guy that had two sacks last week, I think it was, to start the season. I think he had two. And they had Khalil Mack on the same side.
Ooh.
Third down and 10. And guess who they had over the guard? It was Khalil Mack over the right guard. And guess who the right guard was?
Who is the right guard for the Packers?
Yes. You asked me earlier.
Hold on, give me a second. Is it not Menelik?
Menelik's been retired for 5 years.
I'm sorry. Billy Turner.
Yes. Billy Turner.
Big 77.
Yes, 77.
Yes.
And he was holding on for dear life.
I'm sure he was.
I mean, they could have thrown four holding penalties on him. He didn't get a holding call, but he was holding on for dear life. And they put pressure on him, and Floyd ended up getting a sack on that play. But they were both on the left side, and I was like, whoa. Mack and Floyd on that side. Now, it was an obvious passing situation, but you have to account for that now if you are the Broncos, where you will see, and be aware of it, Broncos country, when you're watching the game. If you see Khalil Mack over a guard, and it's Ron Leary, woo! If I'm Flacco, I'm very aware of that possibility. Because Chuck Pagano took over, new defensive coordinator. He's doing some different things, and it worked well against the Packers. So guess what they're going to do? They're going to do it again. And when you can get a matchup in a passing situation, Khalil Mack on a guard, whew, that's a big, big disadvantage for opposing offenses. And when you get a sack out of it, I guarantee you'll see it again. So I don't know if it's going to be Reisner or Billy Turner, but that's not a good thing for the Broncos. So you got to stay out of those situations, though. If you stay out of those obvious passing situations, you'll probably keep them out of doing those exotic, creative types of things, like putting Mack and Floyd on the same side.
That is different. And I know right now you meant Reisner or Leary.
Yes, what did I say?
You said Billy Turner.
Yes.
No, I got you. Man, that's a scary proposition. I mean, that's like putting Von Miller and Bradley Chubb right next to each other, and have Chubb line up over the guard.
Yes, and that's what I was thinking. Like, hey, why not? Why not? I mean, we've seen different NASCAR packages that we've talked about in the past where we had Von, Chubb, and Shaq, and Shane, and all these guys on the field at the same time. Never seemed to do anything, really, right? I mean, just, like, ran out of gas. NASCAR with no gas.
Right.
Right, you go nowhere.
Pickard did his job.
Right. Flat tire. So, but obviously, yeah, I mean, wouldn't that be kind of cool? I'd like to see Chubb over a guard.
Sure.
See, and put him and Von on the same side. Just change it up a little bit. So you know what it does to offenses. Now all of a sudden they can't say, oh, okay, you know what we're going to do right here? We're going to put a tight end right here on the right side. He's going to chip on his way out. And on the left side, the running back, when he goes out in his pass pattern, he's going to give a chip also. Well, now you got a guy over the guard. What are you going to do there? Not much.
You're in trouble.
Fend for yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have the center slide over there to help double him, but certainly it's a different look. It gives offenses different things to have to work on throughout the course of the week, because I guarantee you they got the Broncos' attention when they saw that. But I would like to see the Broncos do some things like that, a little bit different, so offenses can't just sit there and say, okay, Chubb is going to be over here on our left and Von's going to be over here on our right. We're just going to chip on the way out on third down and long, and we'll be fine, and we'll have plenty of time. Give them different looks. Give them different things to think about with your two great pass rushers.
Well, isn't this and just kind of going on a little bit of a rabbit hole here, isn't this something that we were talking about for brief moments last year where – you know, Von pretty much rushes off the same edge every time, right? And we saw Khalil in Chicago switching sides. I mean, he'll line up over the right tackle or left tackle. And I was wondering, this offseason if we are going to see some of that with Vic, just to, you know, mix it up, be multiple.
Right.
And we didn't really see that against the Raiders. I know it's early, but it's something to keep an eye on maybe.
No, it is. It is. And I think, you know, you got to move guys around. You can't just keep them stagnant in one spot, especially in today's NFL. They can take guys out of the game. They can, you know, I don't care who it is. So I like the fact that, you know, what I saw from Chicago, when you have two dynamic pass rushers like they do, you know, why not? Why not give offenses different things to think about and look at? And you know what they got to do during the week now? Now they got to spend time talking about
it
and game planning for it.
Right.
So you don't have to do it every time, but if you do it once or twice now, teams are going to have to prepare for that. And so that's really my breakdown. You know, that's it. You know, we got to prepare for Cohen as a punt returner. He's dynamic back there. Got to stop him. You got to account for Mitch Trubisky's legs on third down, especially on third down. They will do the zone reads, and he will keep it. But on third down, those are really the ones that are killers. I'd like to see our defense give them different looks. Have 6-7 up there at the line of scrimmage. All of a sudden, you rush three, drop, you know, the other three or four back into coverage, and that really gave the Bears offensive line trouble. And also, you got to be ready for Mac and Floyd on the same side, and Mac over a guard, and so be prepared for all those things. That's kind of was my big takeaway from watching the Bears Packers again.
And you hit on I don't know if you did you mention Trubisky's legs there when you just reset?
I just did.
Okay.
Yes.
When you talk
good
about
job asking,
I just wanted to make sure.
Yep.
We had fun last week with that.
Yes. I wish you wouldn't ask. I wish you'd say, well, but also Mitch can run. I don't. You didn't mention that, but he can also run. You better account for that.
I'm looking at Trubisky's rushing yards from a year ago. Now, he didn't rush it a whole heck of a lot against the Packers. I think he had three carries for maybe 11 yards or something like
that.
But I'm looking at his rushing yardage from a year ago, and I'm looking at games. Again, this is Mitch Trubisky running the football. I'm looking at games of 32 yards, 24 yards, 53 yards, 47 yards, 81 yards.
81 yards?
51 yards, 43
yards. Well, there you go.
I mean,
wow.
This is all in one season.
Yeah.
Mitch Trubisky can hurt you with his legs. But again, I gotta believe in Vic, that he knows Vic, or he knows Trubisky maybe better than Chuck Pagano does right now.
Sure.
So I'm hoping that if there's ever going to be a personnel advantage, not like we know what they're gonna run, we don't. But if there was going to be a personnel advantage, then maybe we would have it this week.
Yeah, and you know, that's the one thing about Vic. You know, a lot of people are asking about. Will you have a really huge advantage this week because you coach with Nagy and you know what he's going to call? And he's like, no, that's not an advantage because you don't know when he's going to call it. You guys got to execute it. But what you do know is the weaknesses of those offensive players and the defensive players. And that is really, really crucial information. And you know Mitch Trubisky. What doesn't he like? Well, he doesn't like pressure, or he doesn't like this. He doesn't like, you know, pressure off his blind side. You know those types of things, and that's what you're going to do. And that's what you're going to do. You're going to try to get after them and expose their weaknesses because you have firsthand knowledge of all those players for the most part. You know, they'll have some new players, obviously, but that core of that team that's there, you know defensively where their struggles are and the things that you can try to take advantage of. And also their starting quarterback, you know what he doesn't like. And so try to expose it. But the guy's got to go out there and execute.
Yep.
And make it happen.
And that's the bottom line, really. That is the bottom line. You have to execute. It sounds so simplistic, but we don't have to look much farther back than Monday night. I mean, there was a handful of times where you're in the exact position you want to be in, but you didn't execute. I'm seeing here on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043, a handful of people saying, hey, put Vaughn and Chubb at times on the same side and put Malik Reed on the other side. I wonder if that's something that they're considering.
Especially on, and I don't know how many obvious passing situations they had last week, because it seemed like Oakland was in third and manageable the whole game. But certainly when you get them in certain situations like that, yeah, why not? Why not? Get your pass rushers out on the field.
Yeah.
And get Vaughn and Chubb on the same side. You got to be creative. You can't just say, hey, we're going to line up and let our – great pass rushers get after you, because teams will scheme for those guys. They'll scheme to slow them down. So you got to be a little bit creative sometimes, and hopefully we'll see that with the Broncos defense. Certainly Chicago's doing that with Chuck Pagano, and that's something to watch. Khalil Mack over one of our guards. And
don't let it shock you if you see it on Sunday.
Right, and you know, we all love Dalton Risner, and he's done great. Obviously Ron Leary's been a work in progress, hadn't practiced a whole lot, injuries, concern there. But, you know, those guys trying to block Khalil Mack, I mean, that's going to be tough. So stay out of those third and longs if you're the Denver Broncos. Keep it manageable.
Seeing here, just a little bit of update, that, and I'm taking this from Kyle Fredrickson's Twitter account, Kyle of the Denver Post. He said linebacker Todd Davis and cornerback Bryce Callahan were both seen practicing during the media viewing portion today. We'll get further updates from Vic Fangio in about an hour. He tweeted that about an hour ago. We're going to take Vic Fangio live from Dove Valley. But that's encouraging news. It seems like things are trending in the right direction. Have no idea, you know, what to expect on Sunday. But I'm hoping we'll get a little bit more clarification when Vic speaks in about 15 minutes or so.
Yeah, that's good news. I'm still really concerned with Callahan. He's just had this foot, had it last year in Chicago, hadn't practiced a whole lot, and it continues to be sore on him. So I'm not holding out hope for much from Bryce Callahan. You know, if he plays in this game, I could see it being one of those things where he plays a half and doesn't finish it out. So we'll see how he progresses over the course of the rest of the season. But right now, or especially early in the season, I'm not holding out hope that we get much from Bryce Callahan. I'm counting on Isaac Yiadom to play better. I'm counting on those Bosby and the guy we picked up from the Patriots.
Duke Dawson.
You know, those are the guys that I'm kind of relying on right now in the secondary. I'm not putting a lot of confidence in Bryce Callahan. Todd Davis, now look, hopefully he's been out a while, had that little bit of a setback. Hopefully he's in and he stays, because the Broncos surely need him. What your thoughts on Callahan?
You know, I don't know how I could disagree really with what you just said. This has been a trend for Bryce Callahan. I mean, how many times do you think Bryce Callahan was a full participant in practice from the start of training camp till right now? Two? I mean, maybe? I think it was like he started slow. He was in sweats and like...
I think
one or two, and honestly, you can throw Todd Davis right there in that same category of he practiced a half a practice. He went down day one of training camp, and he's being reintegrated back in practice. That's awesome and encouraging, but at the same time, my expectations for Sunday is in 72 hours or whatever it is, 48 hours. Is Todd Davis going to be able to play at a high NFL level after dealing with this and rehabbing? And I mean, that's a different type of speed that he's trying to practice in right now than what will take place at Mile High on Sunday. So
yeah, it is, and hopefully he has no setback. And the thing about Todd, I think he was healthy pretty much the whole year last year. So. With Callahan, it seems like injuries have been a part of his career. Kind of tells his whole story.
Yep.
So that's why I have more of a concern with Callahan. But hopefully Todd Davis isn't trying to rush back, because you get that itch as a player. And the season's here and you're not able to play in the opener and it just kills you. And you want to get out there with your team and be a part of it. And you've missed all the training camp, and so hopefully he's not rushing it back, and hopefully he doesn't have a setback. Because, look, I mean, that's one position. I mean, cornerback position, they're pretty deep. But inside linebacker, I mean, they can't afford Todd Davis to miss any more time.
Real quick, before we go here, the Shaq Barrett conversation that we were having little bit earlier in the show, he balled out last night, had three sacks. Wrecked the game for the Panthers. He had a sack a week ago, so he's got four sacks in two games, just one and a half shy of his career high back in his second season as a Bronco. Looking at his contract, that it's just 1 year, $4 million, in the NFL world, that is not a lot at all. Should the Broncos be regretting to a certain degree letting that guy walk out the door?
It's just NFL. You know, you just can't pay your backup that type of money. You got a lot of resources in that position already, and I'm sure they would have loved to kept Shaq Barrett. But sometimes you got to let your backups go, and I think that was just this type of situation. And just hope the best for him. But you just can't pay all these guys. You got a lot of money tied up in them. And no, it's not a lot of money. It's only $4 million in the NFL. That's nothing. But you look at what you can do with the money, and you look at how close up against the cap they were and what they had to just do to create more room.
Yeah.
$4 million's a lot for the Broncos. And to spend it on a backup that, you know, wasn't going to be in your plans to start, you just can't do that.
Yeah, and Shaq Barrett wanted to start. He wanted an opportunity to start.
He deserved it.
He said as much. Yeah, and that's being proved right now in front of the world on primetime. So I'm happy for Shaq Barrett.
And what a game, right? I mean, on the big stage,
come
on. Thursday night football.
Really,
how awesome was that?
Yeah, really cool. And again, he's just such an easy guy to root for. I mean,
yeah.
If you followed Shaq while he was here or at Colorado State, you just see he beams. He beams, and he loves football, and I'm glad he's making the most of his opportunity. And he's on the doorstep of generational money if he keeps this up. So, all right, yep. We are live here from Blake Street Tavern on a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Get down to Blake Street Tavern for the Broncos game this Sunday. You can register to win some incredible prizes courtesy of Bud Light, Blake Street Tavern. It's your pro football headquarters. It's your college headquarters all season long. Blake Street Tavern is located just one block north of Coors Field, right in the heart of lower downtown. All right, Vic Fangio expected to speak to the media. We will go live to Dove Valley next.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC. First
Bank. Banking for good.